Welcome to The Anxious Voyage. If you think that title sounds bleak or foreboding, one of two things must be true. You're very lucky, or you need to get out more. On this program, we share stories of life and living. We compare notes. We discover commonalities. We accept that life is a glorious, heartbreaking thing, and we embrace and celebrate all of it. Take the ride with us. We're glad you're here. Now, here's your host, Mark O'Brien.
Hello and welcome indeed. I'm glad you're here. We are coming to you, as always, from World Headquarters in Middletown, Connecticut, the home, as I'm sure most of you know, of Naked Paintball Olympics. I'm really happy to welcome my friend and guest today, Brian Kelly. Brian is the founder of Human Factors Consulting, and we're here today to talk about all things human. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Great to be with you.
Thank you. It's great to be with you too. I know from some things that you've spoken about, and I've heard some of your presentations, that you at one time believed that vulnerability constituted weakness, and that your tendencies were to be, and this is your term, self-protective. And you've made non-specific references to people in your life, as I interpreted it, people in your life who may have contributed to your being that way. Do you, you care to share any of that with us?
Sure, yeah. And so I would say it wasn't a point in time. It was pretty much my entire life up until not too long ago, actually, that my learned belief, and that's the language I use, learned belief, was that vulnerability meant weakness. And it was the behavior of people around me about don't be vulnerable, don't show weakness, don't, you know, if you get hit with a baseball when playing baseball, don't rub it kind of thing, you know, be macho, be tough kind of stuff. And I was like, okay. And so as I went through childhood, that got reinforced in different ways with people close to me, with, you know, situations like that in baseball. And so I was like, I guess that's the way we're supposed to be. And then you see advertisements, the Barnball Man, about just like this, men are supposed to be a certain way, right? And I'm a kid, I don't know any better. That's what the images are. This is what men are supposed to be like. And I'm like, okay. And so we go through life. I've always kind of been shy. I was shy growing up. And from a personality perspective, and that combined with the belief that vulnerability meant weakness sort of led me to not show who I was, right? And except when I was on the sports field, I could kind of just play then. And that was the best time for me. If I was on a soccer field, on a basketball court, baseball field, I could just play then, right? And so that's sort of how I was navigating life. I was fairly good student and kind of just focused in that regard, but kind of didn't like self-express very much growing up, because that's not what I observed around me as a way of being. And so I get into corporate world and just kind of, you know, we're kind of told, you go into the corporate world, you go into the working world, and you'll be in a job for 30 years, and then you retire and you get a pension. And that kind of energy and mindset was the generation of my parents' generation, sort of not realizing that life in the world changes and we have to change and adapt with it, right? And so so going through that, I never really had clarity about what I wanted to do, who I wanted to be. I wanted to be Derek Jeter, basically. I wanted to be the shortstop for the Yankees. Some realities removed that possibility early on. Although I've stayed connected to sports and played sports throughout my life. And so just, you know, business degree, go into the working world, get into technology because that's where the jobs are. Not really having a sense for what really mattered to me and working in that space. Eventually made myself to Georgetown for my first coaching program. And I got feedback from several coworkers in the place I was working that had been through it and said, and particularly my mentor, this one person, Brian Gutman, said, you know, you're going to have to bring real things to talk about because you're going to be in triage and you're going to have to, you know, bring issues to talk about and resolve through the triad coaching. And so I'm like, I'm a team player, I'll play. But there was this voice in the back of my head that said, yeah, but I'm going to control what that looks like. I'm going to control the level of vulnerability in terms of the issues that are there. And so long story short, that showed up in how I was applying what we were being taught in the coaching program. And one of the aspects of that was that we had a learning circle advisor that would help us and would listen to our recordings and kind of provide feedback and guidance and support. And she's like, what's going on with you? In a curious, not judgmental way. And so then I had to explore that. This is like midway through the program. And so I had to kind of explore that and say, what is going on with me? What's getting in the way of me being who I knew I could be in terms of being a coach? Because I through sports, I was like a coach on the field. I was always that type of person in terms of through my play and through my actions and being a leader. And so I had to figure that out. So that was basically May of 2013. I had to do this deep dive, and it was like a week-long process where I went completely inward and trying, you know, soul searching. I was like, do I really want to do this, or I'm just doing this to, you know, and I'm not about credentials. So I didn't really care about getting the certificate other than completing the program and having that be sort of something that could support me in my journey. And so it wasn't just about finishing the program. It had to mean something to me in terms of what I was going to venture into next. And so what I came out of that was this realization that my learned belief had been up until then, and this is, I'm in my 40s at this point, that vulnerability meant weakness, which was totally contrary to what I actually believed, but that was my learned belief. And I was like, well, that's interesting. And realizing that as a leadership coach and an executive coach and someone that's going to be doing this work, I'm going to have to invite people into vulnerability to help with their growth in whatever domain they're looking to grow in. And that, me not having a healthy relationship with vulnerability, is inauthentic, which was totally against what my values are. And so that rub created this reframe that I not only was okay with, that I believed in, and that helped shape why I created my coaching business and then ultimately Human Factors Consulting, is vulnerability is human. And it's one of our greatest strengths. And we just have been taught differently.
Yeah. And I'm going to come back to vulnerability. But I have a couple of other things I want to go into. When your mentor in the program, and you said she didn't do it in a judgmental way, but when she asked you what was going on with you, and when you realized that that would compel you to look inward, did that feel threatening?
It didn't feel threatening. If scary. It was scary. It wasn't threatening at all. It was challenging. It was scary. It was like, oh, I've got to be honest with myself and kind of get to what the root is, right? So it wasn't threatening in that way. It was okay, like, you know, rubber meets the road. You got to kind of make a choice here about who you are going to be. Who do you want to be? And kind of what do you believe in, right? And you can make a choice, right? Because we're learning about, we're always in choice, right? In coaching. And it's like, well, yeah, well, I've never believed any of this garbage. And wow. Not only that, it's affected how I've showed up in life in terms of incongruence, right? So how I felt internally, I would feel that I'd be in self-protective mode. So I'd always kind of show up that way, not really knowing it, because I can't really in real life see myself showing up. But I knew that was happening because of people's responses to me. And when I was myself and showing up, there was a difference between where I was actually being myself and engaging in being Brian, and who I was trying to be, what maybe the lens I was looking through was inviting me to be in that I had accepted until I chose not to, right? And so, it was dark. That it was a dark week that I went through. And I was like, I literally by myself in my home and kind of going through it, not telling anybody about anything. I was just like trying to figure stuff out. And really, it was just having a heart-to-heart with myself and an honest one, and kind of coming to a realization that I can make a choice about who I want to be, and that there was a lot of unlearning that had to happen in terms of getting to that place, because the people that are our caregivers or our parents or teachers or coaches, they're doing the best they can, assuming mm-hmm. positive motivation. They're coming from what they know, right? And there's no judgment there. Although that took me, like, one of the realizations was that I was in judgment a lot because of certain things, right? And so that was the first realization that judgment, what happened in the program too, is judgment shifted to acceptance, right? Accepting that what is, and me wanting someone to be a different than they are isn't going to change anything. Something had to change in me in order for me to create the reality that I wanted. And that's ultimately what happened there. And my story is about vulnerability, but it's your relationship with what I call human factors. It could be fear, it could be control, it could be anything that usually gets in our way of us being our best self. And that's really the work I'm excited about.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but you have so far used the word play twice. Mm-hmm. And I want to connect that to something I heard you say in a presentation you did. You talked about accomplices and allies. Mm-hmm. In your younger life, did you not have accomplices and allies that, other than on an athletic field, did you not have accomplices and allies that encouraged you to be more playful?
I had allies. Like, I had support for playing sports from my parents, my family. They would come to the games. It wasn't about that. When I talk about accomplices and allies, it's not people, it's human factors, right? So it's the belief in self. It's the self-doubt. It's the, and by the way, I'm an identical twin. So I got compared from the time I came out of the womb. And so who's taller, who's better student, who's this? So like, and at the time I was like, I don't care. That's just like the way it is. So that was kind of like part of the dynamic too. And so which at the time meant nothing to me, but I look back and I was like, well, maybe it did have a sort of a cumulative, why are you always kind of comparing me against somebody else? And, you know, we would get called by our last name, the Kelly twins. I'm Brian. And until I got into college, I never really got to, and they, my college friends nicknamed me by my initials, BK. So I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. And so there's this element that I look back on in reflection that, wait a minute, but Brian never got a chance, because I always had the opportunity to, but there's this element of Brian that still was untapped in terms of self-expression. And I didn't realize that until I kind of came through the program, had this, this epiphany, if you will, this moment of realization, and started stepping into more frequently, more naturally who I am. But there was a lot of unlearning that had to happen to get there.
Just out of curiosity, if you're comfortable sharing, where is your twin now and what does he do?
So my twin is actually about 45 minutes away. He lives in Manassas. And he was in teaching. And so right now he's doing consulting work helping his kids get through middle school and high school and the things that come with that.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
You know, I will share with you that I don't think I had any meaningful sense of myself at all until my 40s. And I don't say this to be morbid, and I don't say it to cast aspersions on my parents. But my dad died 10 years ago, and my mom died a year ago. And I've recognized that I, even though I've been really, really comfortable with myself for quite a while now, I recognize that in their absence, I become less reflective of them, if that makes any sense. Whatever it is they might have thought about what I was doing or may have judged what I was doing, obviously that becomes less and less material anymore. Did you have a sense that anything like that in relation to your twin as you two grew older and apart?
Less reflective? Not so much. It's more so the amount of times when people find out that I'm an identical twin, the questions I get. And I say this jokingly, without judgment. It may sound judgmental, but people would ask me, are you brothers or are you twins? And I used to get a kick out of that, right? It's like, I know what they're meaning, are you a twin? But that's how I would get asked it. And rather frequently, I'm like, yes, I'm both. But they, you know, if they hadn't found out yet, they you know, they see the two of us, for instance, say, are you brothers or are you twins? And it's like,
wow.
And think about the question, right? It's like, well, in both cases, I'm his brother.
Right.
And yes, we are twins. And so, and earlier on in life, we got the, people had the perception of twins as clones kind of thing. And that was another interesting thing. I think people's, as they've grown older, perspectives on that's changed. But that, you know, that there was an element of that that was annoying, honestly. It's like, you know, in terms of, wait a minute, no, that's my brother, different person. We have a lot of the same similarities, right? Both athletic, both a lot of the same, we're same in a lot of ways. We're also different in many ways, right? And so that gets to, and one of my strengths or my Clifton strengths is individualization, appreciating each one's uniqueness. So appreciating each one's uniqueness being one of my strengths, and someone kind of just kind of making me like a carbon copy didn't really sit well with me internally. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't really, I just kind of passed it off, and I'm like, well, no, that's actually matters to me, not just for myself, but for everybody, particularly groups that are marginalized, right? It's like, no, the issue's not with them. It's with you and your perspective and how you see things. No judgment, but maybe that needs to grow a little bit. And there's an invitation there.
Do you think there might have been anything healthy about your self-protectiveness? And I want to explain why I asked the question. It seems to me in what you're saying that you did have a sense of yourself. And you did at least suspect who Brian was, as opposed to what all of the expectations of Brian might have been. So is it possible, do you think, that the self-protectiveness that you developed, that you had to confront in the coaching program you were in, might actually have been healthy at some point in your life? Because how else do you hold on to that sense of yourself? How else do you preserve that if you don't cultivate that? And I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The Body Keeps the Score, but Professor van der Kolk, who wrote that book, said, you know, a lot of the coping mechanisms that we develop in younger life work against us in older life. And I just wonder if you think any of that might be true in your case.
Possibly. The one thing I will bring up that came up in the coaching program that illustrated where I was at that point. So I was the observer in the triad, and it was an emotional coaching session that I was observing. And so afterward, the learning circle advisor asked Brian, so what do you feel? What did you, you know, what came up for you during the conversation? And I had nothing, because my relationship to my feelings and my body and being able to ascertain that was zilch, because my self-protective mode had created this this protection. I can't think of a word right now, but this sort of guard against sharing my feelings. I built it up. And so I don't, and the language of self-protection was, is fairly recent. It's around the time of the coaching. So I didn't necessarily have the language and the awareness growing up. Mm. I just had this, what I call incongruence, right? It's like, life's not like this. Why am I, you know, and I thought I was undiagnosed with social anxiety for the longest time too, because I'd always feel anxious in social situations. And I thought it was undiagnosed, you know, reflecting back on it. I'm like, the reality is the energy around me was anxious, right? It was, yeah. It was, and that is something that I took in my body that I had not released. And so that was the interesting thing that I didn't know anything about. Like I had no concept. And as I went, and my learning circle advisor happened to be a somatics teacher. So working with her helps me kind of see differently, right? And appreciate that, you know what, I do have the ability to notice what's going on in my body and ascertain things from that. I just have suppressed it. And that was, suppression was the word that came up with my own self-expression. I suppressed it because of learned beliefs and learned behaviors, I would say. And so I may have had some wisdom in that in terms of it being good for me at some point. I just didn't connect with it, I would imagine.
We are going to take our first break right now, but I just want to share this with you. Thank you. I've already learned from you in this conversation, which I knew I would. And I wrote this down when you said it right now. The energy around me was anxious. What I just realized was that as a young person, the energy around me was judgmental. And that took some doing to overcome, as you might guess. All right, We will take our first break here. We will be back in 3 minutes. Keep it where it is.
Everybody has a story. Everyone's story deserves to be told. And the only bad stories are the ones we don't share. That's why Mark O'Brien created The Anxious Voyage. It's Mark's conviction that every story deserves to be shared, and his purpose is to give people in all walks of life, from any circumstances, a chance to tell their stories. The Anxious Voyage is now on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday at 1 a.m. and 1 p.m. Eastern Time, with live broadcast every first and third Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please tune in, please join Mark, and please share your stories.
Ever wonder what it's like to have your own radio show? Well, wonder no longer, because you can dip into the radio airwaves by being host for the day on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. It's a fabulous way to get your radio feet wet. It's an opportunity to market your business, modality, or book, have a guest, mention a sponsor, and take callers. Or you may want to facilitate a lesson by going solo. It's up to you. Listeners can be online, mobile, in cars with Bluetooth, or listen through Amazon's Echo by asking, "Alexa, play Dream Vision 7 Radio Network." For more details, go to dreamvision7radio.com and click on Host for the Day.
You can't establish your brand's authority without a voice. That's why, since 2004, O'Brien Communications Group, OCG, has been helping companies establish their authority, find their brand's distinct voices, and position their brands effectively and persuasively. So effectively that 9 of OCG's clients have been acquired by other companies. OCG's business model emphasizes efficiency and results, not hourly billing, markups, and media commissions. That ensures OCG's advice is unbiased and its clients aren't at financial risk. If you're ready to find your voice and use it to tell your story, OCG is ready to help. You can find O'Brien Communications Group on the web at obriencg.com. That's obriencg.com, or call 860-944-9022.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of DreamVision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
This is DreamVision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back, everyone. I am here with my guest, Brian Kelly. Brian, I hear a lot of talk about, and it's generally critical talk about relationships becoming, or that our relationships are becoming, transactional. And first I want to ask, bearing in mind that the term commerce actually in its original definitions has to do with personal social interaction. So the first question I want to ask is, do we think that transactional relationships are necessarily and always bad?
I believe there's value as long as you understand what the relationship is and the intention is. Like, you have a relationship with your cashier when you go through the grocery store. It's transaction. You're purchasing goods and you're handing over money to purchase the goods. So not every relationship is going to be transformational, but you can show up in a way. It's a choice, right? We're always in choice in terms of how we show up. It can just be, okay, here's the money. Thank you for processing my order and helping me with my groceries. Or it's, you can engage with, how are you today? You can ask a question. You can invite a more personal relationship. And there's no right or wrong. There just is what's right for you and how do you want to show up in the world. And that can change over time. I remember, like, the prior version of myself was just go through the rote motions because that's what you do. Now I'm going to the grocery store. This is what you do when you go do that. And remember a while back going through and having an engaging conversation with a cashier that changed my outlook and my energy and my perspective on the day because it was a personal engagement. I'm like, well, that's a choice I can make at any point, right? And so transactional becomes a choice, right? What does it mean to be transactional in your relationships? Well, if you're transactional in your personal relationships, your relationship with your spouse or your parents or your children, that might cause problems and challenges because there was a choice made there that the relationship would be beyond transactional, right? There's a caring level, at least maybe an expectation of that, that would be way beyond it. It would be transformative and transcendent almost in terms of that personal relationship, the family relationship, the tribe, so to speak. And yet, unfortunately, many families and many people with close either family or friendships, sometimes there's transactional relationship demonstrated there too. So my perspective is that there's no judgment. There's just awareness of an intention of, is that what I want for this? And if not, that I have the ability to shift it.
Yes. And so yet again, you've made me think about something I hadn't thought of before. And I don't want this to devolve into a study in linguistics prompted by me. But if we think of transactional relationships, transactions, in terms of what we're giving and getting, then that feels more complete and more healthy to me. And I think that also brings in what you were saying about choices. And I'll just share this with you quickly. Years ago, I worked at Travelers, and you know, in every entrance to the building, there was a guard. And I found out that this one guy's first name was Nelson, and my middle name is Nelson. So I told him that, and we had a conversation. And every time thereafter that I'd be going in and out of the building, with or without my buddies, I'd stop and talk to the guy. And I came in with some of my buddies, and I stopped to talk to Nelson, and then I got on the elevator with my buddies, and one guy said to me, "How come you always talk to that guy?" And I said, "How come you don't?" Mm. It's just, right? It's the choice. And I'm sure he wasn't thinking, I choose not to talk to him. It just never occurred to him that he could, I suppose. Okay, so now, I think as an alternative, generally speaking, I think as an alternative, people talk as opposed to being transactional. People talk about vulnerability and authenticity. So I want to ask you, do you think there's a difference? Do you think vulnerability and authenticity are different from honesty and integrity? And yes, I do actually think about that a lot.
Mm. So vulnerability and authenticity, and then honesty and integrity.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's nuances to all four of those, you know, in terms of there's four different terms there. So how do you get to authenticity without vulnerability?
Oh, you don't. And so I equate, and maybe wrongly, I don't know. I equate vulnerability with honesty. If I'm not willing to be vulnerable, in all likelihood, I'm not going to be honest.
Or authentic. Or an integrity with yourself. So that's why, for me, and this is, again, my perspective. Everybody's got their own perspective, but vulnerability is the foundation for authentic self-expression, because when I am vulnerable, I'm being authentic, right? I'm showing up as human, my version of human. And so I'm inviting my clients, my friends, my family to do that as well by doing that. I struggled with public speaking because of the Brian I was, you know, for a large part of my life, because of worrying about what other people would think and being so mechanical and what I wanted to say instead of just speaking from the heart, which I, you know, because I was disconnected from heart to head for so long.
Mm.
And, you know, I have an example that I'll share is back in 2016, I was invited to give a keynote for a Latino-based nonprofit focused on professional development, leadership development called Alpha. They have chapters all over the US. And I was week before, I'm writing my presentation. It's Thursday, I'm doing it on a Saturday. I'm like, I don't want to talk about that. That's not me. That's like what my version of what I think people expect someone to do when they give a presentation or a keynote. And so it's like, I'm going to tell my Georgetown story. I'm going to tell them about my relationship with vulnerability, what that did for me, how that helped me be more authentic, be more in integrity with myself. And it was the best presentation I'd ever given because I was just being me. I had people come up to me, and then I had friends in the audience too that were in the, because I was on the board for them at one time. And people coming up to me and asking me questions. I had a line of people, and I'm like, I can just be me. I walked away. So it's not just somebody saying something that when you just share from the heart and be authentic and share, you know, be vulnerable. It's not just like, and by no means is it easy. So someone saying, just be vulnerable. It's taken me a while to get there. And it is a journey, right? And so I say that with that changed things for me, right? And I don't know what caused me to say, I'm not doing that presentation on Thursday, because I had no connection to it. And it's like, I'm gonna bomb if I bring that. And then I was like, if I just tell the truth about my Georgetown story, my relationship with vulnerability, and that related to the business, you know, growing in your career, career development, which is, I think was, if I recall, is the tone of it. How do I get positioning for what the career I want? How do I explore what that is? And I say, first, you got to grow your relationship with yourself and your belief that you have ability. There are things you bring to the table. And the other thing is you've got to have the courage to explore things that are yet uncertain and unknown, like it may be different than you've experienced before. But if you have an energy towards that, it's probably worth something paying attention to. And who might you ask for help? Vulnerability to support you on your journey. I'm an accountant right now, but I want to be a manager or a leader. I want to step into a different domain, financial analysis, whatever that might be. Well, you can get a mentor. You can make a request for a mentor. You can kind of seek out different options to grow your capabilities there and ask for assignments in your role that might give you the opportunity to demonstrate those skills so that you can build your portfolio for the next step. And so when I think about vulnerability, authenticity, honesty, and integrity, there is a connection there. I, from my perspective and my story with vulnerability, I see it as vulnerability being a foundation upon which the others are self-expressed. And for me, the reason I came to that reframe of vulnerability was because as someone who valued authenticity, I knew I couldn't have a healthy and authentic relationship with vulnerability the way I was and step into this role serving as a coach. And so that wouldn't have been an integrity in myself or others, and it wouldn't have been honest. And so that's why it took me a week to go into introspection and to let whatever came, you know, just come and say, wait a minute, what is the opportunity here? And the opportunity was to let go. It's to let go. And that's what vulnerability is, letting go of what we know to kind of explore beyond the perception that we currently have, the perspective we currently have. And that's a comfort zone, right? Oh, you know, what I know is my comfort zone, and self-protective mode is a comfort zone, and not much growth happens in the comfort zone. And so that's where self-protective, I won't say it's bad because there were some good elements of it. It helped me kind of navigate through life. So there's a positive there. Back to your question from before, Mark. And I think about that. And yes, that happened, but it also delayed my ability to have healthy relationships in a way that was going to grow my life and in a way that I had wanted. And then I think about, you know, bigger items like getting married and whatnot. And people always ask, well, why aren't you married? And I look at the divorce rate and the things that happen through divorce, and I've witnessed some of it from friends and family. I'm like, it's not like I didn't grow up wanting that. And then I looked at some situations like, I want love. I don't know if I want marriage, but I want love. And so I think the journey, and back to your question of vulnerability, authenticity, honesty, and integrity, it stems from love, and it starts with self-love. And that's what came out of the Georgetown experience too, was a change and a growth in the relationship with my self-love, and appreciating and accepting, back from judgment to acceptance, of accepting who I was. And so, yeah, that long-winded answer to your question, Mark, but
no, it's actually a beautiful answer. And I'm going to share something with you. Well, first I want to say, I don't know if you're a Batman fan. You could see all that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you remember in the 1989 Michael Keaton, Tim Burton movie, Batman drives the Batmobile into Gotham, which is in complete chaos. And he gets out and he says into this little Zugger in his hand, shields up, and all the shields come up around the Batmobile. That's how I used to think. So I just want to share with you, my wife Anne and I will celebrate our 7th wedding anniversary in June. And I said to her, it did not take me 60 years to find you. It took me 60 years to be able to recognize you when I did.
Mm-hmm.
she, Anne, is responsible for allowing me to learn I did not have to put my shields up. That is, whew. Okay.
That's huge.
Got me. That, yes, that is absolutely enormous. I want to get into something else. So I'm going to take our second commercial break right now.
Okay.
And then we'll come back for our third and final segment. And I can't wait. See
Looking
you in
forward
three.
To it.
Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
You can't establish your brand's authority without a voice. That's why, since 2004, O'Brien Communications Group, OCG, has been helping companies establish their authority, find their brand's distinct voices, and position their brands effectively and persuasively. So effectively that 9 of OCG's clients have been acquired by other companies. OCG's business model emphasizes efficiency and results, not hourly billing, markups, and media commissions. That ensures OCG's advice is unbiased and its clients aren't at financial risk. If you're ready to find your voice and use it to tell your story, OCG is ready to help. You can find O'Brien Communications Group on the web at obriencg.com. That's obriencg.com or call 860-944-9022.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
Everybody has a story. Everyone's story deserves to be told. And the only bad stories are the ones we don't share. That's why Mark O'Brien created The Anxious Voyage. It's Mark's conviction that every story deserves to be shared, and his purpose is to give people in all walks of life, from any circumstances, a chance to tell their stories. The Anxious Voyage is now on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday at 1 a.m. and 1 p.m. Eastern Time, with live broadcast every first and third Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please tune in, please join Mark, and please share your stories.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. And Brian, thank you again for being here. I just want to share a quick story with you before I ask you a question. My company, O'Brien Communications Group, got its first client in 2004. They happened to be in Hartford, which was important to the story because we could go there to present. So we had entirely restaged and repositioned this company's brand. And we went there to give the leadership team our creative presentation. And the guy who was the CEO at the time was actually quite visibly emotional when we got finished. And He didn't really know what to say. I think all he said while he was still in the room the first time was, wow. And then he got up and he walked out. And the door had just about latched. And he came back in and he said, as if we'd be worried, don't worry, I'm taking the power back on Monday. So my question is, I never thought about this before either. Do you find a necessary relationship between vulnerability and humility?
A necessary relationship. I think there, from humility is my number one value. So, and vulnerability is my story. So interesting that you asked me that question. I don't know about necessary. I think there's an inherent relationship there of vulnerability and humility. It takes humility to see all of you, not just the best parts of you. It takes humility to not have the right answer or not have the answer and ask for help. It takes humility to learn and grow. And so I think, and vulnerability is required to make those acts or to exhibit those behaviors. So I think it's inherent relationship is, I guess, the language I would use, because in order to act, be vulnerable, you need to practice humility. You need to let go of unhealthy ego, because ego can be positive too. Back to your question about can something that's viewed as bad be actually good for you? Ego can be good for you, but unhealthy ego, which I think is often the barrier to people, especially people in quote unquote power, choosing humility and acting vulnerably.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I was going to ask another question, which you've already answered. And that question would have been, can you be vulnerable if you're not humble? And I don't think so.
I don't believe so. You may not have an awareness of the humility, but it exists nonetheless, I believe.
And so, again,
I agree.
I agree, Mark. But I think you're right too. You might not recognize it as humility, but if you're not willing to drop that guard enough to be vulnerable, it's not going to happen. And I I suspect you may have the opportunity here to change my mind about authenticity, and I'm going to tell you what I mean. I think you may know a gentleman named Victor Acquista. Have you crossed paths with him? Okay.
Yes.
We were on a call one day, and the conversation was about authenticity. And I said, I think authenticity has to be contextual. And my example was, in any of my corporate jobs, if I had been my authentic self, my authentic butt would have been shown the authentic door. But you've actually made me think differently about that today, because I think to hold the opinion that I did, I had to believe that I was right without question about whatever issue might have been on the table that made me think, well, I'm authentically opposed to this. But I don't know if I could be humble and vulnerable and hold that position. Dude, you're changing my mind.
Wow, that's powerful. What came up as you were sharing that too is, you know, authentic and contextualizing it is, for me, authenticity is just being real and whatever real is for you in the situation, right? And my thought was, in your situation, maybe you were being authentic to yourself, but maybe you were in self-protective mode in a way as well.
Oh, I don't doubt that for a moment.
And so it was authentic? In that situation, contextually, yeah, it probably was. And in terms, the authenticity piece of it, I think authenticity gets thrown around and discussed and looked at from many different perspectives. I like the term real.
Yeah, there
it's
you
like,
go.
for me, it's unambiguous. What real is unambiguous to me, where authenticity can kind of become somewhat ambiguous because of it takes on maybe different meanings for different people. For me, real is real. And there's no judgment about what that is. It's real. And so it is, right? And so people can have different perspectives of that, but real is real. And that's why what I appreciate is people being real. And if that causes people to be a certain way, it's an invitation to kind of look at, okay, maybe I need to have more context of my environment. And then also maybe the people in the environment may have to use this or may have the invitation to use this as an opportunity to kind of say, why am I getting so aggravated or excited or whatever about this situation? And oftentimes you mentioned about having to be right, right? It's like once I, shifted from judgment to acceptance. And does judgment, is it disappeared from my life? No. If I had mastered vulnerability, no, I'm never going to master it. I've learned how to deal with it. My relationship's healthier with it now. And so when you talk about, I forgot what you had mentioned there that I wanted to talk more about. That'll come back to me.
That's okay.
Sorry about
And
that.
it was about contextual authenticity, but oh boy, you've made me realize yet another thing, which is that to abide by my previous definition of authenticity and to have expressed what I might have wanted to express at particular times, that had to have been attached to my ego, because to believe that my authentic belief is necessarily somebody else's authentic belief, that's egotistical.
And you just made me, you helped me remember. So in terms of believing I'm right, right? So what doesn't happen when I believe I'm right? Well, am I listening? Probably not. Am I learning?
No.
Probably not. No, definitely not in both cases. And so that's the thing. It's like believing I'm right and shifting from judgment to acceptance. It's like it's opening up to, hey, I don't need to be right. And I'm often not. And that's great because I get to expand my perspective. I get to learn. And then I think of it in terms of diversity, equity, inclusion, appreciating people that are different from us, and all these things. And it's if every person, like legitimately, let go of their relationship with needing to be right, what would be different? I just think that would be a huge shift for humanity. And that one thing, just needing to be right. And so what's behind that? It's ego. It's self-protective mode, right? I don't know a world when I'm not right, so I need to be right. Well, what if it's okay not to be right? And and ask people for help and ask people their perspectives so you may grow your perspectives. And I just think that's something that we need more of. And I believe the best leaders demonstrate that quality and that humility. And yet we're taught that, oh, the CEO's got to be the smartest person in the room, have all the answers. And I found that the most effective leaders that I've been a part of are the most humble, and they're the most they're most intent and committed to developing relationships. And through that, they build trust, and then we create better together. That's sort of like I don't know what I call it, a formula, but it's just a way of being that just creates the conditions for success and creating better together. And it all stems from this needing to be right and needing to, have the right answer. And that's part of the unlearning that I had to go through. And I think many of us might have that invitation as well in terms of unlearning some things. And whatever got us to where we are now, we celebrate that. We're gratitude for it, but not everything has to continue into tomorrow with us if that's not something that's going to serve us. And that was the biggest blessing of my journey, is that unlearning process and shifting my relationship with judgment in that way. And the main part of that was vulnerability and changing how I viewed that, because it changed how I viewed myself. It changed how I viewed myself versus others in terms of giving away my power, because other people must be, expectations of others, they must know more than me. They have XYZ years of experience. Yeah, but they're not me. And they don't have my ideas, and they don't have my lived experience, and they don't have my friends who comes from a different country and may be female. And, especially America is built on people that look like us, Mark, right? In terms of, we celebrate that. We're among the people that have brilliant minds and do brilliant things. And so are other people. And so the invitation is, what can I learn from this? And so when I disagree with someone now, I used to get upset and frustrated. And when I disagree with someone, like, now I have the ability to a more healthy relationship with reframing that to, what can I learn from this? What is this helping, inviting me to see and helping me to see differently? And I may choose not to, but at least I go through that exploration to challenge what I believe to be true, which is my truth. It's not necessarily the truth.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to share with you, and then I want to give you the opportunity to let our viewers and listeners know where to find you. Grandma O'Brien loved to say, there's no sense being Irish if you can't be thick. working through that thickness of my Irish skull is an ongoing challenge. So please do let folks know how they can find you, whether LinkedIn, website, whatever you'd like to share.
Yeah, so LinkedIn is great. Human Factors Consulting is my page there. I have a personal page, Brian Kelly. And then humanfactorsconsulting.net is my website. And you can connect with me there as well. And,
okay.
Thanks for this conversation, Mark. This has been the most engaging, deep dive conversation. You've gotten more out of me from a personal perspective than anybody has. And 5 years ago, 6 years ago, this would never have happened because I wasn't there yet. And so thank you for this opportunity to share.
I appreciate your saying that. I thank you. And I appreciate you for what you've taught me today. It's been highly worthwhile. And please don't take this as a threat. I'd love to do it again.
Likewise.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening and being with us today. And we'll see you 2 weeks from today. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning into The Anxious Voyage, the program dedicated to sharing stories, helping people, and celebrating life. You can see and listen to The Anxious Voyage on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday at 1 a.m. and 1 p.m. Eastern Time, with live broadcast every first and third Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you have a story to tell, or if you know someone who does, please email the host, Mark O'Brien, at mark@obriencg.com. In the meantime, please remember, the only bad stories are the ones we don't share.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.